And as promised, now we're going to hear Stolen Dreams. Music and lyrics by Matt McGranahan, written in memory of and inspired by Leona Harper, Sophie Gallagher and Chris McLaughlin are the singers.
When we first saw you and held you in our arms, our hearts were filled with pride, joy and love. From that very moment, our minds were overcome with dreams and aspirations of what you would become. But someone else had different plans to take our dreams away. Love each moment and love each day. Dream your dreams and carry them away. If you lose them, what it seems, 'cause you can't get back stolen dreams.
When I first saw
Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Loads to come between now and noon, so please stay with us. And we're joined now on the programme by Keely Taverner, psychotherapist, author and coach. Good morning to you, Keely. How are you keeping?
Doing well, Greg. How are you?
It's good. I'm doing good, and it's good to hear you are too. And we've been inviting people to send in their questions about relationships, relationship with others, be them intimate relationships, family relationships, whatever it might be. And Keely, we appreciate your time in answering them. So we'll hop straight in, if that's all right. To call a met a girl, we're just friends. I always knew I preferred the same sex. The issue is because I had a year-long relationship with a man. She thinks I'm bisexual, but I was really just finding myself. How do I approach the conversation? In a drunken conversation one night, she said, I'm not going to be your experiment. Now I'm afraid to mention it again.
Well, I think, you know, we have to be mindful that when we're truthful with people, they can also be truthful back to us. And whilst she's been open about, you know, having explored her sexuality, the reality is for some people they may not be comfortable with that and may feel that that person's trying to find themselves, and so it results in them shutting down. They are entitled to feel that way, and I guess it's for that individual to work out whether that's a relationship that's sustainable.
Yeah, indeed, and a very frank conversation. Sometimes we talk around things, don't we, when we actually really have to get down to the nitty-gritty and talk about the subject in hand.
Absolutely. You know, the partner that she's currently seeing may not be comfortable with the fact that they've explored their sexuality. Mm. You know, and that's okay. People are entitled to feel uncomfortable about whether somebody, their partner's been in the same-sex relationship. They are entitled to feel that way. And they can also elect to pursue or not.
Yeah.
You know, and it's for the individual to work out whether that works for them too.
A family member with a child, 4 years after breaking up with the father, they are back together now. The caller says it's clear to everyone around her that he's only there because he has got nowhere else to go, but her daughter is building a relationship with him. How do we advise her? Well, firstly, I presume it's positive if he's building a relationship with his daughter. I don't understand how that comes across as if it's a negative element of it. Maybe they're afraid that he'll walk out on them again.
Well, I guess it feels like the people around her are suspect that there's another agenda, which may not be genuine. And that there is a building of a relationship with the daughter, and they probably feel concerned that once that if that person has their needs met, they may well then abandon the child, the parent, which will cause heartache. The challenge is, if you tell somebody that, they don't usually warmly welcome to those insights as they try to build a loving relationship. So the reality is it's about understanding that people have to sometimes go through certain experiences, but also to check in, ask how they're doing in order to make sure that, you know, isolation doesn't happen, they're not totally alone, and that they're still communicating with people. You know, personally, when I've been in relationships that haven't been healthy and no family and friends haven't been happy, that often can result in secrecy. And it's having a friend who may not be judgmental. That means that there is someone that they have support with. You know, talking about identifying certain red flags. If insecurities start to come up, it's not easy, because it's almost like we could all grab the popcorn and watch a car crash to happen. And that, you know, can be very unhelpful to the person who might be being abused or used. It's not comfortable at all. But how can you endeavor to be there for somebody? Endeavoring not to judge, because it's the judgment that means that the friend will recoil and there'll be much more secrecy and lies are not opening up.
Yeah. Do you have to sort of create the space then whereby, you know, you don't want to leave the person in a situation whereby they'd be afraid that if they reached out to you, I told you so, you wouldn't listen to me, I saw the sign, you know, that kind of stuff. And people, especially with matters of the heart, now, unless it's a physically abusive relationship or coercive control or what have you, you know, you don't see all of it. So you really, a best friend or family member would leave themselves with the relationship whereby that person can still come to them and say, things aren't working out for us. But that requires people to keep their nose out a little bit and to be a little bit selfish, and we're just not really conditioned to that. We want to get in. Get in there.
It's very difficult. You love someone, you don't want them to be her. And there's a real fine line. The I told you so is so humiliating. It's so humiliating because sometimes people have had their own suspicions and intuitions and gut responses that they've ignored. It's like putting egg on your face. It's not helpful. The key is, how can I be helpful? How can I be alongside my friend? And this is sometimes where the professional relationship comes in. As a therapist, you know, this is what I, you know, I have to be alongside people who are sometimes making choices that aren't helpful to them, endeavoring to, you know, put my judgment aside in order to be there for someone. So, you know, sometimes it's not easy, but that's the value is trying to be alongside that person and asking them the 5WH questions. If they've said something to you, you know, what do you think you need to do about that? Why would that be important? How does that make you feel? So that we extract from them rather than superimpose our own opinion, which humiliates and ultimately results in someone recoiling. And if it's abusive, when people start to recoil, that's not a healthy sign.
Yeah. I have three or four questions on this kind of the same way, and we might group them up if that's all right, Keely. And it's along the lines of people in longer term relationships and it feeling a little bit stale, or, you know, that it's gone off the boil a little bit. Everybody's mm-hmm. different and everyone looks and wants different things. But is there any advice you can give to people who feel things are going off the boil? There seems to be a lot of love in the messages. It's just the, I don't know if it's, they don't describe it. I don't know what they're talking of, but you know what I mean? It's a standard enough question.
Absolutely. I think there's an immense value because there's such a pressure on relationships to complete us, to fulfill us. I think what often can happen is a form of enmeshment where we have this super high expectation of fulfillment from another. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. What are other aspects of your own identity that you might need to explore to give you a fuller sense of fulfillment? That also means that you can come back with, you know, kind of work, you're working on yourself, you're looking after yourself. And then as ever, you know, I'm always going to say, sometimes we need to start to have the conversations. You know, what might be helpful? Mm. You know, once kids kick in, routine, things can become mundane.
I think people will be afraid of pulling that curtain back, though. I think that's what's it's the answer to everything, isn't it, really, if you think about it, whether it's a relationship or international war, conversation is the only way to get to a resolution. But I think sometimes people will be afraid of opening up that can of worms, potentially. But, I mean, it's always going to be constructive, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. We are afraid. But the challenge is it starts to show up in our behaviours. You know, moodiness, the slamming of cupboard doors. The thing is, we avoid it, but it starts to show up in our, you know, also in our withdrawal. So, you know, what can be done? That's to remain curious about. I'm an advocate of, you know, communication cards. I've spoken about those before, especially ones that are geared for relationships to start to open up a dialogue. What are the things that you want to achieve, even as a couple? What would you like to do? Do you need time away? Do you need time away from each other? These are important things to reflect on. Because it's absolutely right that things can become stale. Mm. Stale in what way? Stale in the bedroom, stale in your everyday communications. You know, they talk about date night. And sometimes that can all feel very forced. I was at a comedy show last night and it's like, well, you know.
The phrase itself is like fingernails being dragged down a whiteboard to me, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah,
because it's anyway, but listen, if it works for some people, we're all different.
Absolutely.
And you absolutely. Know, we're talking about conversing, and sometimes it's no harm to have another person in there, a mediator, dependent on where you're at. And Keely Taverner is a psychotherapist, author and coach, and also it's available remotely as well, Keely. How do people get more information about the work that you do?
You can find me at keyforchange.com, the number four, or F-O-R, as we say every month, Greg.
It's lovely having you on the show. Have a lovely Thursday. God bless you. Thank you very much indeed. Keely Taverna there. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000, 074 91 25,000. Okay, we are going to say hello to our next guest now, Deputy Patrick McLaughlin. Good morning to you, Deputy. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
What's the reaction been to the alternative budget? That's not what we're talking about. I had Pearce on yesterday, but, you know, the dust has begun to settle now. How's it been received?
Yeah, I think what's been welcomed, I mean, when you talk to business groups, employer groups, when you talk to the unions who are working with teachers, with health workers, the massive issue is housing. We have to deliver housing at the scale that our people require, affordable housing. So that's the big emphasis that Pearce, as our finance spokesperson, Ona Brin, as our housing spokesperson, has focused on. You know, if they were both ministers, we would be seeing the biggest house building program, social, affordable, in the history of the state. And that scale is what's required, Greg, for the foreseeable future.
We invited you on to talk about it's because of where you're from. Obviously, being from North Donegal, but Donegal as a whole, we have the defective concrete crisis, but also your party spokesperson on fisheries and the marine. And you've made an interesting observation on the regulation of one industry versus the other. It's quite an interesting observation too.
Yeah, Greg, I mean, you'll know about this, but a lot of our listeners today in Donegal mightn't be aware. If you have a fish factory, if you look at the fish factories in Killybegs, for example, where the people there, through their dedication, their ingenuity, have built up an industry that has provided for a few thousand jobs now for many years. What's happened there is that the Sea Fisheries Protection Authority are the regulator over both fishermen and the seafood sector. And astonishingly, not only do you have the fish being weighed on a flow scale, so they're looking at the fish in real time, because I went to see this, I've seen this for myself. You also had CCTV cameras on the weighing system that the SFPA monitor 24/7 all the time. No industry in Ireland would have a situation where they have CCTV cameras from outside of their business monitoring them round the clock. So that's the level of surveillance, of policing of the fishery industry. And if you take on any fisherman from anywhere around Ireland, and I speak to them all right around the coast of Sinn Féin's fishery spokesperson, they'll tell you that they are the most policed regulated fishing sector in all of Europe,
Are we overzealous in enforcing EU regulations, or is this an internal matter?
No, we are clearly the best policeman in Europe about enforcing fisheries regulations. No other country touches what we do in Ireland. And of course, our fishermen tell us that about 80% of the wealth from our seas, that's in our waters from 12 miles to 200 miles, and indeed from 6 to 12 miles, 80% of the wealth in those waters is handed away due to unjust policies dating back to the 1970s that are never changed. So our fishermen are watching our wealth being taken away and are policed way beyond you'd see in any other European country. I compare that, Greg, to what's happening with the quarry and construction industry, and it's absolutely shocking.
Did we not make our own bed, though, with controversy as to how we handle our fish that's landed on these shores? And that's why we have had to become the best policemen in the EU.
Yeah, there's no doubt there were some issues, and nobody in the fishing community denies that back in the day. And there needs to be regulation, absolutely. There has to be regulation, but the level is insane. I couldn't believe it when I went down to see. I mean, I don't know any industry that would tolerate CCTV on them from outside round the clock. But even that wasn't good enough for the SFPA. Remember the whole madness where they weren't allowing fish to be landed at Killybegs? They had to take them round to the City of Derry port. And then it was just crazy bureaucracy, over-policing. So what I wanted to point out was, here we have a situation with quarries with the construction industry, where utter recklessness has devastated thousands of lives in Donegal. I was at an Oireachtas committee. This is the other side of the story now. So we have one level of regulation, which is really, really mad for fishing communities, for seafood. But when it comes to quarries, I couldn't believe, after everything that we've been through, that there was an audit done of the quarries, Greg, by the National Building Control Office, the Market Surveillance Office. They carried out the audit of a range of quarries in Donegal. And the quarry that is most closely identified with the vast majority of houses that are affected in Donegal, would you believe that they told us in the Oireachtas they couldn't get access to that quarry to carry out tests? Now, CCTV cameras round the clock on fish factories and killybegs, and they couldn't get access to this quarry to carry out tests, geological and petrographic tests that are required to understand what has gone wrong. Then you had a situation when the first draft of that audit report was submitted. Very mysteriously, criticism of the whole regulation of the industry and criticism of the resources available to this building control office were taken out. This has been revealed by the Sunday Business Post. And since that revelation, we learned that the Mairead Phelan, who's head of the National Building Control Office, Market Surveillance Office, is telling us she just doesn't have anywhere near the resources she needs. Now, we're talking about billions of euro of damage in terms of the taxpayer. We're talking about thousands of lives devastated, and we cannot get proper regulation and oversight of the quarry industry in Ireland.
But obviously that's retrospective. But we have to give people, if they ever manage to get through a scheme, confidence in what house might be built into the future or generally building activity. You know, we've got our defective concrete crisis. We've seen what's happened over in Britain when there isn't proper oversight and regulation. I mean, It beggars belief, and obviously I try and strike balance, but is there anyone out there listening, regardless of your background, political party or whatever, that would not think that we've had a multi-billion euro wake-up call that's had a devastating impact on people's lives, which we'll never be fit to quantify, and yet we aren't jumping through absolutely every hoop and throwing every resource at ensuring, as best as is humanly possible, that this cannot happen again, or at the very least, we're replacing houses that won't be subject to the same problems again into the future. I defy anyone with any background not to state that that's precisely what we should be doing. And the fact that we're not doing is I was going to say criminal, but it beggars belief. I do believe it, but it's hard to believe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I just can't get my head around why we're not throwing every resource at this National Building Control Office. And as you say, we've had revelations in Oireachtas committees in the last year where senior engineers stated on the record that there are quarries still producing defective concrete products in this country. And one of them was a senior engineer called Aidan O'Connell. And we said to him, well, you know, if you have this evidence, why are you not bringing it forward to the National Building Control Office? The other thing too, Greg, is the emerging science tells us that pyrrhotite or iron sulfides are actually the cause of what we've seen in Donegal. We call it mica because that was what the scientists told us about 3, 4, 5 years ago. Now it's believed that pyrrhotite. And the problem with pyrrhotite, if you look at international experience like North America, Canada, Europe, is that if this occurs in quarries, they should not be making any concrete blocks whatsoever.
Or any concrete products for that matter. You see, the problem, I think what the problem is, and it's the only explanation that I can offer, is that to some extent we speak in an echo chamber about this. And that includes at Oireachtas meetings, the laughable conversation that was had about a multi-billion euro scheme. It was clear from the questions that were being asked that people sitting on Oireachtas committees that should know hadn't a clue about this, really. The most basic fundamental questions that, you know, in a very highly paid job, you should at least have briefed yourself on that. Then we have how it's covered in the media. Some sections of the media doing fantastic work in keeping this to the fore. But generally speaking, I think if you polled a lot of people in the media and general society, they would believe it's a job done. A scheme has been announced. It's not for everyone. It's multi-billion. There it is. And the people that are paid to make sure this can't happen again must surely know that. that really, in terms of general awareness of how big a problem this is between the media, the public, and even politicians, it's not there. So we are back to the point, it feels, that we're talking about this amongst ourselves and no one else gets it.
Yeah, I have to say it is very, very frustrating. And what happens at national level is people pay attention and then move on to the next crisis and problem. And of course, there was a sale, a pitch made by government. Look at this, the biggest redress scheme in the history of the state, billions of euro. Look, we're giving everybody 420,000 euro, which was a complete lie. And when you speak to people down the country now, we had their attention in 2021, thanks to the fantastic campaigners we have in Donegal. People started to tell their story. It was harrowing. And there was a lot of solidarity from around the country. But now there's this view, which yours are all sorted. You're getting 420,000 euro each. So it's an absolute lie. And then, you know, just as bad is the fact that the very industry that caused this crisis, the quarry and construction industry, you know, is getting light touch regulation still. And fairness now, I have to say, the National Building Control Office, Mairead Phelan, the people who are heading that up are fighting for more resources, are looking to do their job, but they need those resources from government. So the question I asked, Greg, was how in the name of God can you have massive resources every year behind the Sea Fisheries Protection Authority, 24-hour CCTV surveillance of fish factories, and you can't even get access to a quarry that was responsible for the destruction of thousands of families' lives in Donegal to test to see if that quarry, you know, has deleterious materials, for God's sake, you know. So right. I want to call it out. I'm going to stay calling it out because the hypocrisy and the double standards is astonishing.
All right, listen, thank you very much for your time. Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, who is Sinn Féin's spokesperson on fisheries and the marine. It is 11:34. We'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after we take this break. Okay, welcome back to the programme. Joined on it now by Councillor Micheál Colum of Gaelic. Good morning to you. Thank you very much, Micheál Colum. How are you getting on? 1 second, sorry. I'm not sure if you can hear me, but something else is playing here in the background that I have to stop. All right, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Give us a call on that or, give us a WhatsApp on that or call us on 07491 25,000. Let me see if I've addressed that technical issue. Can you hear me, Micheál Colum? Hello? No, I'm going to have to kick you out and then bring you back in again. Stay where you are. Right, okay, you're gone. I'll bring you back in, though. It's not your fault. Right. By the way, just whilst we do that, we've had a couple of calls along the lines of where is the Garda investigation as to exactly what was the cause of the terrible Krishla tragedy? As I say, a few along those lines. We contacted Garda, of course, just to find out. They said, as this is an ongoing investigation, on Garda Síochána has no comment at this time. Okay, and we respect and understand that. Right, is Micheál Colum there? Can you hear me now? No, I can not hear you. All right, that's gone altogether. Close and all that. Get rid of everything. And we'll bring it back in. Trying to do too many things at the one time. You see, that's my problem. Right, more comments here. Hi, Greg. I have little respect for farmers. I live in a very rural area and the farmers cut hedges and spread slurry whenever they want. They seem to think the rules do not apply to them. Slurry season, we're in at the moment because of the wet weather. It has been extended. It's fine. I just had to correct this issue anyway. You can rejoin. We can go to line two. Good morning to you, Micheál Colum.
Imagine why. And it just shows your technology is brilliant when it works.
Well, yeah, the problem is I try and I over-egg the custard. That's my problem, you see.
I'm very nice there now. So you're obviously very talented and very gifted there, Greg Hughes.
Yeah, oh, without you know? A shadow of a doubt. Okay, thankfully someone appreciates me. Right, we're talking about
the bridge. We do that in Donegal.
We're talking about the bridge in Dúchery, Micheál. 1733, I mean, what a historic thing in the first place. Can you imagine being a fly in the wall as that was being constructed? I love history and I love the notion of it and our ancestors at this crack. But it is a beautiful bridge and we're looking at some video of it right now here for those watching the show. Talk to us about it.
Well, I'm not so sure if my dates are correct. I know that some of the people in the Dúchery will be listening, so they've been more better positioned than I am to give the proper dates. there was, for initially I was told 1733, and then later this morning I was told 1780. But anyway, round about that period, a very sad, difficult time for the Irish people, considering the poverty and the occupation. And then comes along Cunningham, which was a planter landlord, and built the first bridge across the Gibara. That bridge then was added to it. It's actually a very beautiful bridge, and anybody that goes through beautiful Nidahuri, you'd nearly forget, you'd nearly not even realise that you're on the bridge. But I would ask people to stop in the village and actually go off the path and see the bridge for what it really is in its full beauty. It's a double arch bridge, and it's stunningly, stunningly important and beautiful.
And it's a protected structure, isn't it, Micheál Colum?
Yes, it's a protected structure. We have a couple of dozen protective structures within the county. I do know that the minister, who has advised that there should be a couple of hundred, and for one reason or another, the council hasn't put the resources to it, and that's something that I didn't realise until the last couple of days, and I've actually emailed looking for a response for it. But putting that aside, and the main reason why I'm speaking today on radio is to draw attention on the failure of the council to act when reported that the coping stones on the bridge had started to move. There's been an issue on the bridge for a long time in terms of the ivy growing on it. There's trees growing on it, and there's a concern by the locals themselves. I was in on Shoppa yesterday. That's the wee beautiful shop that's in Duhuri. Anybody passing, please do stop and shop there. Small village shops are really important. But, you know, we were talking about it. And the structure of the bridge, there's some concern, because that bridge would have been initially, obviously, a couple of hundred years ago, built to carry nothing heavier than a couple of horses and carts, or what we would have had at the time would have been only donkeys. And now with the heavy vehicles, because it's our main route, if you leave on Mohalia, heading for Ballinafinia, heading for Liscannel or Balbafay. So it's a really important bridge. And it's important that we actually make sure that the bridge doesn't start giving way in any shape or form through time.
And what is the coping, just for those who may not be aware, because every day is a learning day, the coping stones are the stones that sit atop atop the walls, effectively, of the bridge. And I presume if they are there and they're well fixed, it stops anyone maybe pushing some of the bridge into the water or picking stones off and creating these holes that have been created there. Looking at it in terms of that part of the work that needs doing, and we can talk more about the general structure that might need work, it just needs really the motivation to do it. It's not for a skilled stonemason. They wouldn't be long, I don't think, bringing the top part of that bridge into a good state of repair really quite quickly if the will was there.
Yes, look, the thing here is, and this is what's really important, and it's a listed structure, is that you have to have a specialised, qualified team of people to carry out this work. There are grants available for this, up to, I think, some to 80% available to the council, so I can't imagine that extra 20% would be that difficult to get. But the problem here is that when it was initially reported, there was only one or two stones. And I believe that could be, them stones could have been retrieved. But what's happened over this last couple of days or this last week, and I'm not going to get into the finger pointing in terms of who's at fault. It's happened, and that's just the reality of it. But as you can see from what I sent Caroline or earlier, is that there's quite a lot of coping stones missing.
Yeah.
And it's like a broken window syndrome. Once you break one, you find the others will start breaking. And it's disappointing. And it's not that I want to just use this opportunity just to have a rattle at the council, but I think this bridge, like many of our other structures that was built by the occupiers and the planters, you know, as much as we mightn't like it, but they're important and they're historical, and we need to maintain it, and we need that investment.
Stay where you are, because Dr. Andrea Redmond, Duhuri Development, Tidy Towns also. Good morning, Andrea. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning, Councillor Micheál.
And it's good to get this on the agenda, but you've obviously this has been under the attention of the group for quite some time. And we can go back to 2021 when you were calling on the council to, I suppose, really shore up what was there, repair what was there, because you've predicted, I think, really the damage that was to come. So we've lost a couple of years from your first calls, Andrea.
We did. We raised this issue when we had a new committee formed, and we took stock basically of our beautiful village and things like the outhouse and tried to get a preservation order, which again hasn't been put through. But we had serious concerns about the bridge because there were stones missing at the top. And we also had members of our heritage committee. We, Seamus Cole, had gone in underneath, was concerned about ivy and the impact that that may have on the structure. But at the minute now, Greg, to see if you walk the bridge, it's literally, the bridge just comes up to your waist. So there's a serious health and safety issue. The issue that we had, and we've had great support from Micheál, is to try and work through kind of the mire that is the council and council's departments, and to get the right hand speaking to the left hand or working in tandem. Because we would go to one department and they would say, oh, you have to get special stone masons and blah, blah, blah. We're a small committee. We don't have that expertise. We don't have that money. And we don't own the bridge. It's literally owned by council and by road service, and we believe it's their responsibility.
And it's a protected structure, but the job of protecting 100%. That structure is not the local community or the local groups. Now, we've talked about the top of the bridge, Andrea. In terms of, you know, inspecting underneath, as you and Micheál Colum also pointed out, this was built really for horses and carts, donkeys and traps. But obviously it's taken some heavy vehicles now, for which it wasn't designed for. And we've seen similar with the bridge at the bottom of Letterkenny here. Are we ensuring and inspecting underneath to make sure that its structure is sound and that we're not doing damage that will end up being irreversible?
Well, this is the major question that we have at the minute. You know, what is the time scale for regular structural analysis of these historic routes? Because if you stop and think of people now, if that closes because of damage or safety issues, how are people to get from Fentown onto Dunloe? You know, it's a major arterial route that needs to be protected. So not only because it's a historic property or a historic site, but also because it's a major arterial route would severely impact residents, schools, tourism and that type of thing. So we're asking, you know, what is, and I think there was a bridge survey done, maybe it was a 2006 or something, and I was actually reading it, and I think they proposed to have a regular structural analysis of these bridges. I don't know, has it been done? It's very difficult to get a straight answer. They just seem to say, one aspect of council will say, oh, well, that's such and such, you go and see such and such, and then you go to them, and they, you know, so we're not getting any further ahead, and we do have serious...
Would you like to see, obviously, it assessed for its structural soundness, but also, you know, the walls, they probably have a name, restored. Would you like to see the ivy off it pointed? Because it is beautiful now, but I think it would be, it would become a real extra special landmark if the ivy was taken from it and it was pointed respectfully and appropriately where it needed to be looked after. And is that the view of the committee?
Yes. Yes. The thing about ivy, ivy undermines the structure because it works its way in through the stone. And, you know, we can't go out, I could go out with a trowel and a bit of cement and put in some of those capstones, but we can't touch it because it's a protected structure. You need specialist stone masons. We couldn't go out and try to pull the ivy off because, you know, we could do further damage. So literally we have to sit and watch the thing disintegrate in front of our eyes. We've raised the issue in 2021, you know, and we warned council, look, there's several stones loose. Now, it just looks shocking at the minute.
Safety perspective, it doesn't look like it would be very difficult for minded individuals to actually toss quite a lot of that bridge into the river without the capping stones and what have you. Okay,
100%.
Micheál Colm, how are you going to progress this then? So from within the council, because we've heard from Dr. Redmond the frustration that's there, and Dr. Redmond, a voice of the community, I'm sure many people sharing her frustration is what I'm saying effectively. So how do you, as an elected rep for that area, progress this within the council?
Well, you know, as Dr. Redmond has said, and the great work that herself and Janice and others are doing in the area, and I feel kind of a bit embarrassed as local councillor that steps hasn't been taken long before this, and we shouldn't have to be forced onto radio to bring attention to it. But it's not just the ivy for me in relation to the structure of the building the bridge. It's also that now we see knotweed encroaching on it as well, and it's something that I think that the council should look to help to address, because the knotweed itself will have a massive impact on the bridge. And what I'll be doing is obviously raising it with the council and continue to raise it with the council. But the main thing, and I spoke to a senior engineer today, and in fairness, the engineer was correct. He says, look, it's not fair that a committee has to constantly write, and myself constantly in contact, to get the departments within the council to actually co-work with each other. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I can't go and say, listen, it's this department and that department, it's not their fault, it's their fault. People don't care. You're just the council. Get it fixed. We're neglected enough as it is in West Donegal. Dury is a wee beautiful village that has been shockingly neglected over the years. And now we have a fantastic committee who are capable and able and willing to put it up a notch, put that village on a map, and we as a council cannot continue to ignore them.
But in the response to you, it's not really clear who's responsible. The Roads Office might have an advisory role. The Heritage Office, though, doesn't have the authority to take on the work, but the Heritage Office can provide information on who might be able to do the work. And perhaps maybe some money might be available from historic. Like, I appreciate whoever put this answer together. Actually, I know who it is, and you know his heart would be in the right place. But it seems to be falling between stools. It's kind of frustrating.
Well, this morning I did find out that there is a Road Central bridge design, and maybe I don't have the right terminology for that department, but it does come under the remit of the road section of Corlicombe-Gunningall. So we need to move now. We need to find out. I have got a guarantee today that next week's meeting on roads that I'll have a more up-to-date answer. And I don't believe for 1 minute that there's a lack of willingness on the local staff, because our local staff are more than capable and able and willing. But what we need to have done in 2021, when this was highlighted and raised, we should have put our heads together and said, listen, let's move on this.
All right, okay. Thanks very much, Micheál Colm. And finally, Dr. Redmond, I'm sure you appreciate us raising this issue. I'm sure you appreciate the work Micheál Colm is doing on this. And I'm sure you appreciate the response from the council. But we've kind of done talking now, aren't we? This is a beautiful, historic, protected bridge. Let's crack on and do something about it. All right, thanks so much for your time, Andrea.
Thank you so much,
Take care of yourself. That's Dr. Andrea Redmond and also Councillor Micheál Colm McGillan-Asberg. I was informed just in the last wee while that there might have been flooding in Burton Port. I know 2018, obviously, Burton Port very, very heavily affected by flooding, but I didn't get any information overnight, which is a little unusual, or this morning, but I've been told there was flooding in Burton Port last night. Sorry, I'm mixing Burton Port up with another part of the county. Burton Port wasn't affected in 2018, was it? Anyway, listen, that's what happens when you go off the top of your head. But we'll follow that up if need be throughout the rest of this day and into tomorrow. No comment from the Gardaí. A whole year has passed and still no outcome of the ongoing investigation. What's the holdup? Why the delay? Not good enough. The one thing I would say, given the events of last year, is that it has to be a extremely, extremely thorough investigation. And there are many, many elements and strands to that investigation. Because let's just say charges were brought. I'm not saying the aura will be, but let's just say they would have to be based in extremely forensic and thorough investigation. So to be honest, it's not surprising to me, and this is not in any way to say it should take this long, but it's not surprising to me that it is taking this long. I understand the Gardaí are considering whether or not to release a statement to coincide with the anniversary of the tragedy. We shall see. Are the council not cutting hedges in our draw this year? the Mahara Road narrow enough as it is? I don't know. We can chase that up. A phobia. We talked about phobia earlier on and some strange phobias. A caller mentioned someone in her circle who has a phobia of being alone. They're okay to go outside, but they will not be alone under any circumstances, including while travelling. Has anyone got any experience with this type of phobia or be able to advise? So it's not like a fear of outdoors or indoors. It's simply a fear of being on their own. And I think if a psychologist were involved in that, they would want to maybe drill down into what is the cause of that phobia. Does anyone have contact for the cure for shingles? Are we doing that? Okay, well, I don't know. If we can find out the information, we'll pass it on to the caller. Listen, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Tomorrow, we, of course, have the Friday panel lined up to discuss the big stories of the day and of the week. And that's entertainment from 11 and much more besides. But for me, Greg Hughes and Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show, enjoy the rest of your Thursday.